Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Conaway, founder and CEO of Innovate Her KC. And I have to tell you about today's episode sponsor. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Canva. Canva is an amazing tool and resource. You can go and collaborate to create amazing graphic designs for free. Whether it is a presentation to share an idea, a video to launch your business, a social post to start a conversation with Canva, you can design pretty much anything. They have all of these amazing templates. They have all of these assets that you can use to very, very easily create beautiful, stunning materials to share with your audiences. Discover the magic of visual communication and how Canva helps you create a lasting impact today. Visit canva.com to learn more. So we have with us a guest that I am very excited to talk to. I always love talking to folks from the Kansas City area. I always love talking to innovators. That's where my heart lies. But another interest of mine is education. And so today we have with us Pamela Lern, Program Director and Lead Educator of World Builders Academy. So we are going to be talking about some exciting stuff, but first things first, Pam, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm super psyched, so I'm just going to go ahead and kick it right off. This is going to be great. So I'm going to ask you, my friend, tell us about your journey.
My journey. So I began World Builders Academy in my home on my kitchen table. I've always wanted to sort of be an entrepreneur that started something from the kitchen table and went up from there. And the whole reason for it was because I wanted to bring to Kansas City the kind of school and the kind of learning environment that I just wasn't finding available to me in my area. And 7 years later, here we are. We are in our own space. We went from the kitchen to a commercial space to now our own building with 2 acres that we are, you know, living in and fleshing out and learning how to love so that we can grow and do all that sort of groundwork. So you're catching at us at a very exciting time.
I love it. And we are definitely going to dive down deeply into the pedagogy or the philosophy of World Builders Academy. But first things first, I want to talk to you. You said that you started a business at your kitchen table, and that's essentially, you started a school at your kitchen table.
Yes.
And so I want to talk to you about that. And I want to drill down on that a little bit. Now I'm going to be perfectly transparent with you, and I'm going to tell you that In my world, in my paradigm, education is not known for innovation. You know, for by and large, we are educating students in very similar ways to the ways that we did, 100 years ago when we were an agrarian society or when we were a manufacturing society. And now we've kind of shifted to this like service economy and technology economy. And so I want to ask, as an entrepreneur, because that's what you are, as well as an educator, what has it been like to create a learning environment that is unique and pushing the envelope and testing boundaries?
Well, there's so much to touch on there. So, I mean, to go back to what you're reflecting on about sort of an antiquated way of approaching education. Yeah, the education system we've had, and it's not a new idea that's out there, but some of my favorite educational thinkers have discussed this widely and expressed it widely, that the Industrial Revolution brought about a major change in human and our social evolution, but it has ended. I think it is agreed upon that we have now entered a new age that I think most people are calling the digital age. And we are well into that, a decade, oh, yeah, maybe even two. And the idea that what is needed in the industrial age is not what is needed now necessarily. And what I mean by that is I tell my prospective parents all the time is really, what is this about in a nutshell? Well, if this was 1980, which I am the child of the 80s, and when you wanted information, you had to go to the library. You had to learn how to walk your fingers down a filing cabinet, you know, a little card catalog, and find the book you were looking for, get that book, go home and take the time to read that book and do research that way. And frankly, that's just not the way we learn anymore. From every age, top to bottom, we are learning how to do things without a lot of what we would call sort of what would be traditionally called foundational background information. I have one of my mentors, Donald Marinelli, over at the Carnegie Mellon School of Entertainment Technology. He said this to me one time. He said, they're making expertise not a commodity anymore. And what he means by that, I think, is that you don't have to be a woodworker for 20 years to understand how to put together a cabinet. We can just go onto YouTube right now and any child can type the word in, make a cabinet. And maybe they wouldn't be able to do it depending on their age because of the tools involved, but it's all out there. And so to present education in a linear fashion all the time, it's not really a match to what is available. Because while a teacher in an authoritarian position might be able to say, you need to do A, B, C, and D, well, any child can go right home to their device or to any of their resources and just skip straight to G. And by then, you know, and they're bouncing back and forth. They do G first, then they do A, then they do C. Then they have to go back and maybe pick up B if it's fundamental. And on they go. And so the kind of environment we need to create for education, for forward thinking students, is got to be responsive to our environment.
Sure. No, that is fascinating. And I'll be honest, I hadn't even thought about it from that particular point of view. You know, this wealth of information that is available to us at our fingertips, you know, specialization is becoming rarer. Like we're seeing more and more generalists, people who are able to access lots of different kinds of information. So that's really interesting. Now, I'm very curious about your education philosophy. What would you say is kind of the primary bent or drive for World Builders Academy? Like if you were to talk to a parent or talk to a student and say, this is what we do, what do you do?
I tell parents this all the time. And I also tell my students when the time is right, because we do have students that are in the grades as well as the early education stages of life. But when they're ready for it, when they start questioning the validity of the work that we're doing and they start asking me for grades, we don't do grades. And the reason why that is because learning has to happen when you're ready for it and when it's intuitive to you. I can tell you that I want to teach you the letter S today, but that's not where your head is. Then I can throw all the worksheets, all of the cartoons, all of the games at you that I want. But if you're not ready to accept that information into your mind, then it could be like, you know, a large, what engineers would call loss of energy in that transfer, right? I put out 100%, you maybe got 5. But when your mind is in the right place, in the right position to learn, and that is where we are in terms of educators here at the school. Our jobs are to observe and watch the children, be with them, be present, be mindful, and teach them through mentorship through just modeling how to be mindful of where they are. And as facilitators, we give them the opportunities that we feel like that they're ready for with our eye on, you know, logical progression of how you gain information, because there is a system, you know. So, yeah, I would say that our, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I love that. And I, if you don't mind, I'm going to share a personal little anecdote and see kind of how this fits in. Mm-hmm. So I am not now, nor have I ever been, a stupid person, but math has always been a little bit of a struggle for me. And I remember very clearly, like I was fine at math. You know, I've always been better at English, but I was fine at math. And then you hit third grade and in came the multiplication tables. Mm. And I understood the concept, but for whatever reason, I couldn't grasp as easily as my classmates seemed to. And it just took a minute. And I think that set me up for a lifetime of failure and frustration and fear of math, because I was presented with information that I wasn't ready for, wasn't receptive to, wasn't able to, I wasn't able to figure it out. And so then anytime math would come up, I would immediately throw up a wall and throw up resistance to that learning. Is that kind of what you're alluding to, like, let's present the information.
Well, let's use math. Yeah, let's use math as a construct for what we do here. Math is actually one of the skills that my children, boys or girls, are the most strong at. They do very well with that, and it's because our approach is different than what, say, a larger public, you know, education system might be. Public education systems have other demands. They're asked to, you know, present children to be able to, at the end of the year, pass certain, you know, milestones and tests, such as being able to add to 20 or subtract from 1 to 20. Whereas our approach is more about understanding numbers, understanding what they are and what they do, seeing the patterns. In math particularly, is seeing patterns. Yeah. And that's something that children are particularly good at doing. So there's a lot of stats out there saying that girls fall off in math by third grade and boys excel more, even though girls are stronger earlier on. And what we have found is that when you teach them the why of why things are, and you take the time to do that, that I tell my kids who are in first and second grade all the time, get these fundamentals down, just these things get really fluid. And we take a year to do what most schools and most systems take maybe 2 or 3 months to really do. And then the rest, they got to keep going, right? We got to keep going. But I said, if you get these skills down, then by the time you get it down, every math thing you have to do is going to be so much easier. And it's the same with learning how to read. We do a lot of, like, I hear a lot about sight words, get these kids to memorize as many words as they can. Well, the human mind can only memorize so many words before you hit a kind of a cap with that. Why don't we teach them how to think about letters, how letters play with each other, so that they can tackle certain things that happen? So to go back to your original question, what is the point of the school? I tell the parents, it's not to get your kids into Ivy League. It is not to get them to become lawyers or doctors. It is to get them by the end of their 18th year to be able to say, I tried some things. I failed at some things. I know I'm good at these things. And more than that, I know a little bit about myself. And I don't need to be sold. I don't need to be sold. This program's going to lead you to success, because that's the kind of thing that we did in my generation. We were told, go to college, do the right thing, check all your boxes, get all those A's, and your life will be easy. And here we are, frustrated, having experienced at least
overtired, stressed out, unhappy.
Three major economic slums that have really killed our productivity as adults. And none of it was exactly any singular person's fault. But we were promised something and we all worked for it. And then to have it kind of come out, now we're all kind of like, what are we about? Right? As a generation. But I don't want that for my children. I don't want that for anybody's children, because the resources are out there, but you have to be able to know how to ask the questions. And
for
if you are trained to just follow directions for 18 years, all the way up until you get kicked out at high school, how do you know anything about yourself? Do you even know what question to ask?
Yeah.
What do you want to do when you grow up? And most kids are like, I'm trying this. You know, I had a college buddy who literally threw a pencil at the college catalog to decide her major because she just didn't know. And I thought, I don't want that. And I can empathize with that because I felt that too.
I actually picked my college major based on the fact that I was an English major, and I chose that because it was the only major in which I only had to take one math course and then something called an applied logic course. And I was like, okay, I'm out. I don't want to do that. Well, that is fascinating. And so for our listeners, I want to point out there, I love this concept that you're introducing, because in education, there is a concept called scaffolded learning. The fact, the acknowledgement that in order to learn deeply about any subject, you have to start at a base and build a strong foundation, and then have a logical progression of knowledge that comes based on that base. So like when you're learning the alphabet, first you learn your letters, and then you learn short words, and then you learn more complex words, and then you learn sentences and how they tie together, and then you learn. So you have to figure out what that progression looks like. And so what you're talking about is getting right to that source, getting right to that foundation, and building it up strongly, and creating a foundation of understanding rather than rote memorization, or spitting out numbers or spitting out letters. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say that sometimes because we are a private school, that that people kind of automatically throw us in a nutshell, people are antithetical to public systems and all of the beautiful research that has been done in education. And I would say that we definitely are not against any of that. We believe in the science. We believe, yes, there is a progression to how people learn in terms of stages, like you had just outlined so beautifully. But there is also the element that cannot be easily quantified, because we are human beings. And we need to remember that when we teach, we are teaching human beings. And what that means is that while you're learning your letters, how are you learning to deal with your frustration? How are you learning to deal with it when a friend doesn't do exactly what you want? How do you manage it when you're the leader in this moment, but no one's following your directions? Or vice versa, if you're not the leader, how are you being a good team member while you are learning how letters work together? This has to be together. This has to be fundamentally grown. Right now, the system is built to educate masses. And what that means is that you're hitting milestones in these quantifiable, marks. Can they write letters? Yes. Can they read three-letter words? Yes. But they're not as able to integrate that or braid it in beautifully with how are you growing as a person? Because it matters less to me as your facilitator here at my school that you can get all your times tables memorized if you are not a good team member. If you don't understand that after 5 minutes, you need to get up and walk around the room because your body needs that energy to be expelled in that way, in a productive way. How are you when you fail? And that's so important to me, because sometimes we get people who come in from the public, a public system, they join our school, and we spend almost like I would say half to three quarters of the year just reprogramming the I can't or the tell me what to do attitude. When the question is, what do you want to do? You have this available to you. We have all of these lab pieces available. But if you are not used to, again, asking the questions of yourself, understanding yourself, I'm sitting in this chair, but I really need to get up because I have, a need in my brain to get up and shake my body, but I'm being told and I've been trained to sit in this chair and be miserable. No, we look at you and we say, if you need to get up, then get up. I've looked at children and I've said, you have 20 problems to complete to practice this skill, but know yourself. I've observed that after 5 problems, your brain needs a break. So go and take that break, come back and finish. But depending on their age, especially as they get up to 8 and more, I start putting on them their own responsibility. It is up to you to tell yourself to come back, because you're old enough now that you know that you're taking that 5 problem break, you got to come back. And it takes off of my plate as a teacher of being a micromanager of people. I don't have to say, what I tell you. No, sir. I trust you because you are capable and you are allowed to fail here. And I will be here to help. And that's what scaffolding means to me.
And you said, you just said something really, really interesting to me. And I'm going to, I'm going to tell another story. Here it comes.
I love them.
I have so many stories. So when I think I told you, I used to work for an organization that did a lot of work around experiential learning and project-based real-world education. And, mm-hmm. and I loved my time there. But one of the things that we did is we had a, it was an experience. It was a, like a field trip day, but the intent was to connect students with entrepreneurs and have them solve a problem. We would present them with a problem that was given to them by a community organization, and they would have a certain amount of time to work with this entrepreneur to come up with a solution and a pitch, and then they would pitch to a panel of judges. And the hope was that we would help these kids kind of get out of their own boxes. And it was really interesting to me because more often than not, when we would first present the problem to the students, and we gave them a lot of latitude and a lot of freedom to kind of decide how they wanted to move forward, the objective was always to have the students leading the process rather than the entrepreneur or the program facilitators. Right. But what was fascinating is when we would first present the problem and just be like, okay, go, you have, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours or whatever, there was always this look of panic, like, mm-hmm. oh, I have no idea what to do here. And, mm-hmm. and so it's speaking to your point, you know, when we're talking, and again, I'm going to harken back to the agrarian industrial society that we have kind of built our education system on, you know, mm-hmm. we hear this concept of teaching to the test, you know, mm-hmm. we are wanting to hit those milestones, making sure that we have all of these very rigid set of expectations based on grade level, age, experience, all of that good stuff. But what happens there is you lose out on critical thinking. And mm-hmm. as we've moved to this digital age, you know, we have robots these days that can handle a lot of that industrial stuff. What we need are critical thinkers. We need Absolutely. People who can evaluate themselves and evaluate the community behind them. And more importantly, we need people who know how to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, to your point, to your earlier point, we have all of these mechanisms for people to get information. We need critical thinkers who are able to say, this is a problem. This is what I need to learn. Mm-hmm. And here is how I go about finding that information and then applying it. And so it's just really, I loved it because you're essentially setting students up for that kind of experience. And that's where you see a love of learning. I mean, that's like pure opinion, but people love learning when it is a fun and interesting and safe process for them. You know, you said you give them the freedom and the latitude to fail. You know, of course, when you're new at things and just learning things, you're gonna fail. Absolutely. And we have to create an environment where our students and our youth have the grace and space to do that and understand that failing is often just another way that something didn't work. Try again, you know?
That's right. And failure is such a negative word, but I think, you know, we're in a state of, I think in our society where I feel like we're transforming meanings of words. And I think failure has got to be on the table because failure is not negative. You're not a loser if you fail. And they're right. still so pervasive. But this idea of teaching confidence is something that we have to do early. And we are inspired by respectful infant educating philosophy. We are inspired by the Reggio Emilia philosophy. And both of those philosophies are surrounding the principle of respect. And respect of the child, respect of the teacher, respect of the families. And that these are sort of threefold major pieces of the learning environment. It's not just how come my teacher isn't teaching my kids what they need to know? How come you're not doing your job? You know, teachers may turn around and say, how come you're not doing your job at home? And it creates this dichotomy that is not accurate. We all work together in community. And this idea of standardizing things, it's so silly because we do cooking classes here. And sometimes we make dumplings, for instance, and that's a new experience for most of our kids. We can't tell the kids, everybody make this dumpling at this in 5 minutes, every one of you, whether they've done it or not, and expect that outcome to be exactly the same and be rigid. And there's a way to get them to do it, but it's not joyful. We've learned that we have to be able to teach them personal confidence early. We started with sort of the standard pre-K age in my home. And then I realized that we needed to go younger. And in fact, I used to work in college level learning, and I was walking around several sort of Ivy League campuses that I've had experience in. And I looked around at the kids there and I said to myself, what's different from, or like, what makes these children distinguished? And they are distinguished. I mean, to get into a good institution like that, I think you have to be to some measure. What makes them different than what, you know, someone might say with a lower tone, state school kids? And I was a state school kid, or community college kids. And really, there's no difference. The only real difference, though, if there was one, is perhaps they were given latitude and the freedom to experiment. They were given the ability to observe others in action. Dentists' children become dentists, that kind of thing, right? They just see it. They see the world and they understand it from that view. We don't ask them to understand more than they're capable. I started saying to myself, no, high school. We need to go back to high school so that they can be enabled by college. Then I said, no, middle school. And I very quickly learned, no, earlier. Yeah. Earlier. And that's where I discovered RIE, Respectful Infant Educaring. It really goes back to the very beginning. And when we train our infants in what we do, and it sounds silly, right? Because they're infants. Most people think just change your diaper, feed them, they're happy. No, there's another element there we must feed into. And that is to make themselves aware. They are going through a journey of discovering the new world that they are in. And they don't need to be rescued out of every situation. You create a safe environment for them and allows them to create confidence within their own bodies. Children who grow in confidence do not, for example, hurt themselves as much. They don't climb up to heights that they are not capable of climbing down. They understand their own body cues as to, oh, this feels like danger to me. And that is the seed that grows into a child that becomes confident to say, I'm trying this thing. It's frustrating me. I can't do it, is what I hear a lot. But then a child in confidence goes, I'm going to try again. And that's really where it starts. And that's why we go to the ages that we go to. Yeah.
Well, so you've just made like 20 different powerful statements. And I like just a little note for you. I told you in our pre-show prep, like I have this notebook here and I write down the things that I think are interesting and the things that I want to drill down on. And you are the first entrepreneur in a while, the first guest in a while where my page is already completely covered with notes. I'm just like, oh, there's so many things I want to talk about.
I have to do episode 2.
but one of the things that I want to talk about right now is I just want to remind our listeners that today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Canva. With Canva, you can design your ideas with ease. You have total control. All it takes is you just, whatever you can imagine, you can get it down onto your digital asset. You can get inspired. They have over 500,000 free templates. They have a rich content library. I personally love doing, they have a bunch of really cool videos. I found a really neat shark one the other day that I used for something. It was so fun. Like they have all kinds of cool stuff. I'm constantly finding new tools and new assets to use and integrate into our digital marketing. All of these things can help you and your team achieve your goals. I think we all know that content marketing is kind of the wave of now and the wave of the future that we're riding. And Canva helps you do it easily. It helps you create beautiful assets. Definitely sign up. Start designing for free at canva.com. Now, Pam, you said that you had used Canva before, right?
Yes,
what's been your experience?
Well, I'm a designer by trade. So I used to do interactive children's museums and educational spaces like that, all the way to theme parks and such. I appreciate a beautifully designed thing that I'm asked to look at. So when it comes to the boring 90s PowerPoint, no more. We use Canva all the time for when we want to make presentations. And I learned about it in college and I haven't stopped using it since. And that's been some years. So they've gotten their time with me.
Yeah, it's Canva is like 1,000 steps above the clip art of old that we remember. Just super slickly designed stuff. And I'll tell you that I do actually talk to folks in the innovator community on a regular basis. And anytime somebody asks about graphic design, we have people come in and be like, use Canva. And I'm like, heck yeah, use Canva. It's amazing.
That's right.
It's so easy. All right. Well, so folks, we are here with Pamela Learn of World Builders Academy. We're talking about all kinds of things, but really we're talking about the power of teaching our youth and fostering and facilitating our youth, loving themselves, knowing themselves, and helping present themselves to the world. Yes. In useful and happy making ways. And I love that because I think you're absolutely right. I feel like that is kind of the foundation of creating fulfilled, satisfied, productive people, you know, and like I said earlier, like critical thinkers, learners, people who learn because they love learning rather than because they were forced to, you know? And so I love that. Now I want to ask you this. I want to talk to you about your very, very specific tactics, because one of the things that we talked about in pre-show prep, we talked a little bit about design thinking, and I think you and I share an interest and an appreciation for that. But can you talk to us about some of the, I guess, the tactical ways that you engage with students to get them where you want them to be?
Well, we've talked a lot about it already, I think. So again, as a designer, I have a real appreciation for anyone who's taken the time to sort of quantify what it is, this sort of ethereal blob of how do you get people to understand themselves. And one of the ways that I think helps us answer that question is the design thinking process. Designers have to look, their first step is to look at what is there, right? And that is something that I think many grownups could get a lesson in. Don't try to wish for things to be there that aren't there. You need to just work with what's there. Your limited resources as they are. You, as you are. You wish you were smarter, faster, brighter, but maybe you're not. And so you've got to start there. Then you have to ask the question of what you're trying to achieve. That helps you gain focus and help you gain understanding. After that, you break it down in steps, in iterative processes of trying something, failing, trying again, testing it, asking others what they think. Again, that community, that feedback, being a team member, and then doing it again. And that is so important. That in particular is what is different about looking at education from a non-design approach to a design approach, because lessons are linear in regular schools, aren't they? They go from this to this, and every science experiment is successful because it is designed to be so. There is no variation in your circumstance. So everybody's vinegar and baking soda will always fizz right on cue. Whereas if you have to iterate through that process to get that to happen, it teaches you that failure is not negative, that it is just the next step to the next step.
Right. It's a progression or an evolution.
That's
for sure.
Right. And also that there is no end. We always think of things with an end. Graduation, it's an end and we win. But there is nothing like that now. And certainly the world doesn't support that anymore. So design thinking, I think, is a powerful way for, and there are a lot of schools and a lot of public districts and a lot of initiatives to kind of get that. But I think we're in a shifting moment where people are still being taught how to be teachers of that sort of antiquated system. But then they're all so invested as well. Every teacher I know wants to do this other thing, and they want to be able to quantify it and make that measurable so that it can be passable to the powers that be. So, So I think that it's really the way forward, whether you're a design person or an artist or someone who thinks in that realm or not, it just makes the most sense.
For sure. Well, so just a little context for our listeners at home, when we're talking about design thinking, which is exactly what Pan is talking about here, there are five different stages, and I'm not going to go into super deep detail, but first is empathize, researching your user's needs, defining the problem. And this one is really interesting to me, and I'm going to give you yet another example. So I told you about this competition that I used to help kind of facilitate. And so this was really interesting. We were working with a financial institution, and when we went in, the question that was being asked was, how might we, because that's how you state the problem, but how might we engage youth to use banking products, right? Mm-hmm. And what was fascinating is I think all of us, the adults, the facilitators, the folks from the financial institution, we were all expecting the kids to come up with like apps and, you know, different banking products and things like that. But what was fascinating was in the empathizing and the research phases and the ideation phases of this process, we found that the students, more often than not, were asking the question like, why has no one taught us financial literacy at this point? Like, you're asking us to talk about like banking products, but we don't even know what a CD is. And we don't know the process of starting, opening a savings account. And we don't know about interest. And we don't. And so what was fascinating is the problem that this institution thought they had was not the problem that they actually had. Yeah. And that came out during the empathy and the definite, like defining the problem, defining the user's needs. We figured out that what they actually needed was financial education. They were like, hey, bring us pizza at a lunch break at our school and teach us about financial topics. You know, that's actually what we need. And so we were able to like kind of circumvent that. I think that the bank was planning on doing like all of these very expensive products and technical tools. And really all they needed to do was engage around this topic with these kids and teach these kids, you know, this is what these things are. This will set you up for financial success. And so that definition of the problem is hugely important. Then you have stage three, which is ideation. That's where you're coming up with ideas. No idea is bad. There is often a germ of truth in the ideas that you come up with, even if they're silly. I mean, you could be like, hey, I want to have, you know, giraffe butlers on Mars. Mm-hmm. All right, well, maybe there's something in there. Like maybe what it is, what you actually need is capacity building. That's what the butlers bring. I don't know. Ideation, prototyping, you know, coming up with a test of your solution. Like what is the best way to bring that solution to market or to use it in your life? And then trying it out. Does this work? What doesn't work? What can we fix? So that's kind of the design thinking process that we're talking about here. And you mirrored that process just beautifully, but I wanted to name the steps really quickly.
No, and it's important to note that, you know, when I was in my youth, my college, there wasn't anybody really using that term, but it is now. It's a real word. I mean, it's a Webster verified design thinking is a word. So your listeners can definitely look into it.
It's a real thing. Well,
it's like an established thing, right? Yeah. Designers and artists have been using this process for all of human history. So what I think is important is that your listeners can know is it's not like when I was a kid in college and things. The design thinking wasn't a real term. It was a process that has been used since the beginning of time by human beings, by artists, you know, most obviously, mm-hmm. and designers. And now we're in this exciting time now where people can actually Google the words design thinking. And there are actually free courses in design thinking. And I think that you could use to apply to different points in your life. And I'm just thrilled to see that design thinking in this process is now sort of getting that C-level recognition that I think it deserves.
it's definitely hit the you know, the worldwide global vernacular for sure.
I think so, absolutely.
Yeah, well, and what I love is, you know, so design thinking is above all, it's a problem-solving methodology. You know, it provides a framework. And so if you have a problem or if you have a challenge or an obstacle or an opportunity, even, you know, design thinking is going to give you a roadmap to or an option of a roadmap as to how to solve it. And so that's what I love about it, you know, because often
it's really intuitive. It's an intuitive approach. You know, I mean, we all naturally kind of do it and but to have it all quantified and labeled and understood. Damn, so everybody sort of can be on the same page about where we are. It's like, no, this isn't the finished product. I'm iterating. Like, it's just very nice to be able to say, you know?
Well, and I mean, to your earlier point, it is never the finished product. Like, there's no such thing. So in Japan, they have this concept called Kaizen. And that just means continuous improvement. The fact that, you know, once you think you've finished, you've never really finished because there's always an opportunity to streamline and make it better. And, you know, prototype, test, reiterate, you know, figure out it's never going to be perfect, but you can always improve. And I love that concept.
Yes. And trying to bring that in, you know, down to the foot soldier level of what we're doing every day, you know, because all of these wonderful theories and philosophies and pedagogies that are being developed on paper sounds so great. But then we do the hard work of implementation. And the implementation is where we are. We are iterating through implementation. That's why we're on Startup Hustle, because we're just figuring it out. But we know it's a good thing and we know it's the way to go. And if we can make it be something that is scalable, that is something that is sustainably stable, that can be brought to a mass audience in terms of like numbers, I just think that can't be anything but positive. to start from respect and move forward from there. Yeah.
Well, and to bring it all back around full circle, I love the fact that you are equipping our youth from a very early age. Because when you started at early age, that's when these concepts and that's when these things, these learnings get reinforced. And then you continue to reinforce them over the course of a lifetime. But, you know, you're equipping your students and you're equipping our children, the generations of leaders and folks that'll be running the world someday. You're equipping
or not,
them.
You know, it's fine. What makes them find their joy?
I don't care. Like, you could be running your household, you could be running your car. Like, it doesn't even matter. But, you know, at some point, these folks are going to have to be decision makers. At some point, these folks are going to have to figure out what they want to do with their lives and who they want to be and how they want to be and take action. And you're providing them with a really strong foundation for that. Like, here are some tactics and things that you can do to figure that out. And here are ways that you can listen to yourself and the world around you to be better present. And so I love the fact that you're creating an environment. I don't think you're getting too like stultifying or too prescriptive, but you're creating an environment that fosters those kinds of attitudes and that knowledge and allows it to flourish. So good on you. I'm giving you a round of applause.
Thank you. It's like clapping for someone in the middle of a marathon. I very much feel.
Yeah, well, for sure. And I mean, honestly,
I appreciate it, but I'm still running right now. So
that iterative process, like the marathon is probably never, ever going to be over, but I would say that you're a pioneer. I know that these concepts are starting to be talked about within education, but you're already doing it.
On the shoulders of giants.
For sure. I totally understand that too. People are like, innovators of movement. And I'm like, we didn't start it. Like, we built on what was already there. Totally. And then at some point, it will hand off to someone else. Well, so that is absolutely fantastic. And I cannot tell you how enthusiastic I am about you and the work that you do. I hope you love it. Do you love it?
Of course I love it. We're not at the stage where we can do this and not love it. And I don't think that'll ever happen. You know,
that's right. People... Like, if you got into it for the money, you got into the wrong thing.
What about that baking course again you were talking about? No. I think what's incredible is that what we're here to do is to build frameworks. We are not the answer. We are not going to solve problems that people might be looking for us to solve in the way that I think some people look at the public school and again, may blame and may point fingers. No. What we're here to do is to create an environment where framework for someone, because they're not here forever. And I tell them, my older students, that I was like, I can't be next to you next year or whatever to answer this for you. And then if they try to answer each other's questions, I'll say, are you agreeing to be with her for the rest of her life to help her spell those words? No, then you better let her figure out how to do that, because, you know, otherwise you're signing yourself onto something else, you know? And so with that framework, they can edit it. They can take away parts that they thought they knew about themselves, and they can change it and they can grow in it. And by the end, I hope to meet a lot of my students again when they're my age, and hopefully they can reflect back on the years that we've had together with positivity and, oh, I get it, you know, kind of ness, which is what I get to enjoy from thinking about my influential teachers and educators in my past.
Sure.
Oh, they were trying to tell me something. I get it now. And there's joy in that as well. And ties that back into the joy of being alive, you know?
that is a lovely, lovely note to close out on. Like, what does the future look like? And I love hearing that your ideal future is meeting your students in the future and finding them where they want to be, you know, again, like that happy, satisfied, productive, you know, knowing themselves, understanding the world around them, having deep connection to the world around them, and, you know, figuring out how they want to show up in the world. That's a question I think every person should be asking themselves. How do I want to show up, and what actions and what thoughts will it take to get me there? So I love that. I am going to ask you the human question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to go. I feel like this is kind of a softball, but all right. So this is not the human question. This is a context question, but do you like music?
Love it. I was a musician.
Okay, good. I actually asked this question once of a guest, and they were like, I don't really listen to music. And I was like, I don't know what to do with that now. but your question is, what music are you listening to right now that is bringing you joy?
You know, I just recently watched a movie that brought Mariah Carey back into my life. And listen, my girls do Cyndi Lauper, Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston. We hit all the 90s. We haven't got any further.
Oh, there's beautiful divas.
I'm telling you, anytime you want to rock out, I'm for it. 90s.
You're going to get some Madonna in there though, right? Like early, like 80s, 90s Madonna. Oh yeah.
I just watched a movie with Mariah Carey, and it's just, she's the only one spinning in my head. You know,
What was that movie she was in? Was it Glitter? Did you just watch Glitter?
I did.
Did you just watch Glitter?
I just watched a movie called Free Guy, and it's amazing.
Okay.
My now favorite movie for the moment.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to check that out because I did. Well, I just read an article that reminded me of Glitter, and I was like, oh, that was such a lovely, wonderful travesty of a movie. It was so terrible. No, it was great.
I love her musicality. I'm not a huge fan of like her as a, you know, Kardashian type personality. I'm not really into that. Yeah. But when you walk by every night, talking sweet and looking fine, I'm there.
Walk by every night.
Wait. Talking sweet and looking fine. Where are my 90s girls at?
Oh, I love that so much. All right, that makes me really, really happy. Okay. Oh, and a little bit of Mariah trivia for you.
No.
Mariah has she has what vocalists call a strong whistle voice. She has a command of over 5 octaves, which is pretty rare as far as vocalization. And much like Minnie Riperton, who came before her, she could technically be classified as a musical instrument in her album liner notes. Did you know that? Because she has such a wide range.
Yeah, I didn't know she's technically a musical instrument. That's so exciting.
Technically, if you go above a five octave range, you can be categorized as a musical instrument because you have so many octaves at your command.
You know, I was always
super jealous.
I'm going to be there. My voice is doing what Joni Mitchell's did. You know, it's just going down and lower
and lower. Same. I'm pretty sure that by the time I'm 80, I'm going to like sound like a 5-pack-a-day smoker. Just and I think I'm okay with that. Like, I'm just going to be like the cranky, salty old broad, like dead-eyeing teenagers. You know, that's going to be me.
That's me too, but I'm not smoking all the time, which makes it seem like I'm not getting, you know, I'm not getting my due. But being a teacher, I talk all the time, so my voice is getting used in a different way. Yeah.
Well, I cannot tell you how grateful I am that you took the time to chat here on the show today. This has been wonderful. I hope our listeners have enjoyed the conversation because I know that I certainly have. Thank you so much for taking the time. Yes. Yeah. I think that's actually the first time I've done a duet on Startup Hustle. So thank you for that.
Yes. Exactly.
Absolutely. Well, once again, we want to give a huge thank you to today's episode sponsor, Canva. With Canva, you can work together with your team from wherever. They make it super easy. Get on the same page as your team with seamless real-time collaboration. Now, we want to ask you, what are you going to design today? Because Canva is there to empower you to do so. You can explore and start designing for free at canva.com. Also, want to mention, if you are existing in the e-commerce space, if you want to sell things online, if you want to sell things on Amazon, definitely keep an ear out for episodes hosted by Andrew Morgans. He is our resident e-commerce expert. He's going to help you get to the next level. So definitely keep an eye out for those episodes. He is going to share a whole lot of information that's going to help you level up and hopefully make a lot more money. Friends, we are so grateful that you take the time to listen to us week after week. Keep on coming back. We love sharing the stories of founders, entrepreneurs, influencers, thought leaders with you. It's one of my favorite things to do. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will catch you on the flip side.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.